And now, as you know, this particular meeting, we do a step tradition, reading from Living Clean, and we also have a speaker at the last Monday of the month, and tonight is the speaker meeting. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you one of the one thing I could say is, if I ever have doubts this program works, this woman casts away any doubt in my mind. And to one of the great gifts of being in recovery is to watch people grow and change and become truly themselves and inspire others. And she's, even though I have a little bit more clean time than she does and still inspires me every time I see her. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you Marlene from Edinburgh. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Marlene, if you do not mind. And you can speak as long as you need to. This is an hour and a half meeting, so take it away, my girl.
Thank you very much, Michael. Can you hear me okay? Yeah?
We
Yes,
can hear you,
we
Marlene.
can.
Brilliant, thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks very much and for your lovely words, Michael. That was some going. But you're right, I think that is exactly what happens, within NA, is watching people come in the door and them growing and becoming alive, bubbly, lovely personality, finding fun and joy in life, and all the stuff that the program gives you, really, being supportive, loving, and caring towards people and myself. It's an inside job, and literally that's what NA is. But I'll take you back a wee bit, to actually, before I started using drugs, I literally from an early age felt quite indifferent. I never wanted to be in the family that I was in. When I was at primary school, I would always see my friends, like, and I'd be like, I want to be in their family. And quite a lot of fear within the household. I never knew what was happening for day to day. You most certainly weren't allowed to talk about your feelings, if you started crying about anything. Shut up and sit down was the mess the what I got. And literally, the household, it was a violent household as well, and that was it. There was punishment, if you behaved badly or you weren't in on time, or if you never ate your dinner. The full plated dinner. So that being said, it didn't take me long, within school. So primary school, it was actually quite good. And I don't know if that was just, a form of escape or whatever it was. Aye, primary school it was good, and as soon as I hit secondary, I started. I was like a, well, as we know, Jekyll and Hyde. I literally became a different person, and what I didn't quite realise was why I became that different person. Because I was insecure, I was vulnerable, and I had to have control of something, within the household. I never had any of that. I never had any control or whatever, and the only thing that I could control was literally, sounds quite weird actually when I say it out loud, but whatever I can try and control the day, I will. When I feel like I'm absolutely powerless over a situation, which are the hardest times where I know that there's nothing I can do about a certain situation, the pain is immense. And I'll try and control that in all different aspects in my life. Going to the toilet, food, shopping, holding on to things like my life depends on it. I'm having a wee chuckle actually when I'm saying all this. So in secondary school, I literally, because I was so insecure and shy, and I had that negative self-talk the day dot, before I even put a drug into my body. And literally in secondary school, like teachers asking questions and stuff, I would know the answer, but I wouldn't put my hand up just in case I got slagged for it or called stupid or whatever. And I literally became the class clown instead, and I just messed around. I skived school, I got expelled, was on attendance and behaviour sheets. I would bully people, and that again, bullying people, that came through all my insecurities. I didn't find this out until working the programme, to be honest with you, but it makes perfect sense now that I have looked at all that stuff and realised that, I was just shy, insecure wee girl that had never been, I don't know, looked after properly or whatever. I don't know how I would phrase that, but I never got the love and attention that I so desperately wanted. And I mean, even still to this day, like I have two sons, and literally one's just moved to America, and the other one's down the stairs. And all the things that I used to complain about, like, oh my God, all the washings, oh my God, the dishes, see the mess they leave lying about, blah 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 blah. But actually, see that being needed, it gives me purpose, it gives me drive, it gives me I so I miss that. I miss that, like being needed, And that comes from, as I say, that comes from an early age. I want to be loved, I want to be needed, I want to be supported in all the things that I do in my life. And I most certainly never got that when I was younger. So it's difficult even today to turn that around. And thankfully for the people in Narcotics Anonymous who can show me that love, tell me that I'm doing well, even when my negative self chats in. And from like after school, I left with nothing, no exams, no grades, no nothing. And I remember 16-year-old, and I thought, wow, I have well and truly effed this up. I knew it the day that I left the school, I knew that I'd ballsed it up. And so for the age of 16, I moved into my own house, because that's another thing. Nobody on this planet will ever tell me what to do. I rebel. I absolutely rebel. When people try and give me, the way that I see it is orders. Whereas in Narcotics Anonymous, there's no orders, there's nobody telling you what to do. Suggestions are there, and I'll gladly take on suggestions, but I will not be told what to do. And that's why Narcotics Anonymous works so well, because things are just suggested. And if, people said it to me, if you want to get well, you need to put in the action. And this is how you do it. It's up to you if you want to do it. It's your choice. And so literally, I grabbed it with both hands. But so I so for the age of 16, I moved out, because mum and dad would have wanted me any like. They wanted rent money, but they wanted me to be in at 9 o'clock at night. It was never going to happen. And for the age of 13, I worked in a chip shop as well. So I worked in chip shops for years and years. Met a guy when I was 16. Fell in love, as you do. I fell in love with somebody that was just out of prison. went away and stole me a Mars bar, and I thought, he had gave me everything that I was looking for, and that's how deluded I really was. Or I don't know so much about deluded, but somebody that actually showed me love and affection, I held on to it. I'm saying love and affection for stealing me a Mars bar. So anyway, we moved in to the house together. Went on to have two children. He was literally just out of prison. He was on all sorts of drugs. And I'd dabble in things, and then the party scene, take whatever, and then sort of, I suppose, get back to life, working, and then as time went on, it became literally like he was in and out of prison. He was taking all what different drugs, and so after, even though I dabbled in whatever and I'd done things, even though I didn't even like the feeling of it, I just continued to do it anyway. After I had my second child dying, I ended up getting a prescription, and to be honest, the drugs helped for a good while, because the life consisted of literally having two young children, working a full-time job, and my day out literally was going up to prison, going on a visit. And this went on for years, so my family would see me when he was in prison, and then when he was out, nobody would see me. And actually, friends told me that years later that, nah, we can't have a pal like you because you literally weren't even available. You weren't there. You were only there when he was in prison. And the drugs became more, and over the course of the years, I literally, everything that I said I would never do, I'd done. Everything that I said I would never take, I took. I mean, the only time I sort of felt any freedom from myself was when I was high on drugs. That's it. That's literally it. And I say that, but I am actually quite a chicken-hearted person, and even though I took drugs, I still felt everything. I still felt, I still remember feeling the shame and the guilt and about, being around my family, them trying to help me, but they just couldn't. And I remember my wee brother came out looking for me one night, and he said, nah, I'm not even, he found me in a pub somewhere, and I was hallucinating, thinking my parents were on the wars and stuff, and he was like, no, that's, I can't even be around her. She's absolutely away with it. And then getting, going to different agencies and trying to get help, because I would do many, many detoxes, and I never ever knew it was the first that done the damage. I always, obviously all the justification in the world, oh, well, I just went through a detox, so I mean, I should actually be all right. I'll just take the warning, it'll not happen again, it'll be fine. And I genuinely believe in that. Literally, that's how much I didn't know. And thankfully, we're coming to any, I now know, not only about what it was like as a person, but how the disease actually works within me. Because it'll always be about the drugs, always. But it's literally about the disease addiction being active at any given point. And that's why every single day, I'm saying every single day, that might be a wee bit of a lie. Majority of the days when I get up, it's literally about listening to my Just for the Day, the podcast, getting a wee bit, readings. I'm actually reading a wee book now, and it's got lovely quotes in it. Thanking God, day of gratitude lists most nights. I've got a few people, there's a few women, we've got a group, and it's like we keep each other accountable because we're all putting things in at different points and stuff. And that really is like literally handing my will and my life over. Because I was told when I first got into recovery, so basically I got my children taken off me when I was just coming up to 30. 29 I think it was. And social services had already told me, literally, you're going to get your children taken off you. If you, they weren't even telling me to stop, by the way. They were just asking me to even try and remain stable, but I couldn't even do that. And I remember the day they did take them off me, and it was literally, I don't know, it was so weird because I felt despair that actually that's it, my children are taken off me. However, it was along the lines of, oh well, I can use more. It gave me the free reins to use more, but it didn't take long before I spiraled. And I remember sitting in my house, literally, so my children were away, my family were hardly speaking to me, and I remember sitting on the couch and took the drugs that I had, and I thought, oh my God. I remember thinking the drugs don't work anymore. They do not work. Because it didn't matter what drugs I was taking, I was still feeling everything, and literally that, what have I done? What have I actually done? This was obviously before I knew anything about any abstinence, and it was quite a, the progression, everything, everything coming on top. But quite so for a lot of that time as well, because I was that deluded in mind, thinking that I used to think that was better than I didn't. Oh, I never injected. Oh, I've not been in jail. Oh, I'm no out in the street drinking out the bottle. It was all bullshit in my head, because literally, it didn't matter what was happening on the outside, it was what was happening on the inside, and I was destroyed inside. But I would always put on this pretense, as long as my house was nice and tidy, as long as I wore, I don't know if if I had social work visits or whatever, my house would be spotless, I would be nice and clean, I'd have clean clothes on. But obviously, I never seen what I looked like. I didn't see how bad I really was, and so I ended up going into a treatment centre, and I remember my sister came in to visit me one day, and I don't know, something along the lines of, I didn't look that bad or something, I said to her, and she said, really? I'll show you some pictures. So she brought in pictures the next time she visited, and oh my God, I was like Skeletor. But do you know what was really worse about it was when I looked at the picture, I was dead behind the eyes, dead. There was not a bit of life in me, and I thought I was all right. So thankfully, she did actually show me, and I'd done the detox and done the 12 weeks in treatment, and everything that I'd been running through my whole life came back tenfold. The fear, actually, I'd go as far as to say crippling fear and anxiety. Like I did not know even what had hit me, and because I'd went to meetings prior to that. I'd already built up a connection with people, and people invited me for dinner and coffees and meeting attendance. I was never out a meeting, but during that time, people told me, literally, the suggestion: 90 meetings in 90 days, find a sponsor, get a home group, start doing service. And I literally had nowhere to go, other than NA. I had nowhere to go. And I remember sitting in a meeting thinking, the identification, and I knew straight away when I sat in a meeting, I am home. I am literally home. It's the comfiest I've ever felt, within my body, but anywhere in life is, I know that I belong. I know that I'm home when I come into an NA meeting. So that's exactly what I'd done after I got to treatment. I started doing the suggestions, aye. Well, my life did depend on it. I was ready to say there, like my life depended on it. It did. And everything that I'd done, literally to no use, was I stayed with people, they stayed with me, people in recovery. Oh God, I just couldn't be in my own body. It was quite horrific. And but I do remember with the detox, obviously I lied about how much I was using before I went in and stuff like that. So the detox was absolutely horrific, and in any time like since that time, you know, if I ever think about using or whatever, I take myself right back to that very time. Like, is that where you want to go back to? And it most certainly isn't he. So, as I say, I flung myself in any, literally, you know, people say, jump in the middle of the bed, that's what I done. And through that, I started like being able to go. I started playing football. At the age of 30, I started playing football. I started going to like tournaments and stuff, meeting up with other people. No matter what, how uncomfortable I was, like, I literally would sleep, get up in the morning, run out the door, and do everything recovery and try and like. I started volunteering, feeding the homeless, playing football, going to meetings, meeting up with people, going to all every service committee there actually is, every single one of them. I'd be there. Somebody put me forward for a position. I mean, I was sweating. The sweat was pouring off of me. The anxiety was ripping out of me. But thankfully, they put me forward for that position because service has always been what I've done consistently throughout my whole recovery. Because to give back for all the times that I've took off of people, and this is what the program is in a nutshell, I believe, is giving back. Giving back, like whether that's saying yes to cheering, whether that's going to a service committee, but also fulfilling things, fulfilling the service positions. You know, many times I'd be like, oh, I didn't want to do this, too hard, you know, personalities. And thankfully, my sponsor would be like, all right, so you want to give up on your service position, do you? Even though you need to do it for a year. I'd be like, oh, Jesus. And you know, I'd stick to it, you know, I see to my commitments, I'm responsible, I see things through to the end, you know. So everything that I've learned in NA, I take out into my life, literally seeing things through to the end, you know. I've been to college quite a few times, I've graduated, I'm back in college again, I'm doing sports coaching, and it's difficult. It's difficult, but I know that if I put in the graft, you know, and to be fair, this is probably like, this is my passion in life. I want to be able to coach young children. I want to be able to go out, have fun, and take part in sports. It's absolutely amazing. And I never thought I would say that ever. And this isn't just being like this hasn't been a dream or anything, but this is realizations over the years about where I want to be, and the best thing that I've ever done in my whole life, not just my recovery, was putting myself forward for stuff. Also being rejected for stuff, by the way, you know, going for interviews and all that kind of stuff. But it's all learning, and God's got a plan for me. I have no doubt in my mind God's got a plan for me, and what's meant to be is meant to be. You know, so I, you know, just being able to be there. So my son's got taken off me, and then I got them back when I was 9 months clean, and it was solid, absolutely solid, really, really hard work. But the one thing I've never done is run away, even though I've wanted to many times. Actually standing up and being accountable. Learning all over again how to be a mother, and the relationship I've got with my sons today is absolutely night and day, night and day. You know, they're like my best wee pals. And as I said, my oldest one, he's now in America. He's doing a footballing scholarship. And that's hard work and determination, you know. And there's no doubt in my mind that's NA in a nutshell. You know, because I still have family that's in addiction and stuff, and they're no as positive. My children can see that there's the two sides of life, being an active addiction and being clean. You know, and that they can see their goals, they can see their dreams, their aspirations, and no matter what it is, you get up and you do it. If that's what you want, you'll be prepared to do whatever it takes to get there. And that's everything that we get taught in here. So literally, I am I'm a wee bit stressed with college and stuff, and when I just started college there, I thought, right, be honest, Marlene, because you're not that great at, I'm not really that great at asking for help, if I'm honest. I'm good at giving advice and help and support and stuff, but when it comes to myself, I find it really difficult still to this day. So when I started college there, I said, it's all right if I get a dyslexic test. Anyway, it turns out I am. So it is quite hard, but with the right support in place, it's just that being honest and trying not to give myself a hard time for, it's a different learning style. That's all it is. And it doesn't mean to say that I'm stupid or I can't do things or whatever. I'm actually like quite intelligent. But I remember years and years ago, when I was doing a wee bit of homework, and I remember looking at this word in the dictionary, and I wrote it down properly. And anyway, I went to my granddad and I said, right, okay, that's whatever the name it was. He said, no, are you stupid? That's not how you spell it. And see, these words, they still resonate with me today. So I get insecure about all this kind of stuff, but actually, the evidence shows, like, literally, I've completed about three different courses, which are academical, and that was without the help. I have completed them. Aye, it was harder, but it was the self-talk. But every morning going up to college, it's like, no matter how hard it is, you keep going, you get a bit of time. It's like recovery. It's literally everything that I've got in my life is like, whether it's difficult or not, it's literally one foot in front of the other. And if I can do that, I'll be all right, because it's literally just for the day, always just for the day. So I don't know how long I've actually spoke for, Michael, but if the, I don't know who's even in the meeting, to be honest with you. But if there's anybody just coming about, please keep coming back and get and how wonderful is it that we've got something so special that we can go to meetings, we can share literally how we're really feeling, our mental needs, and people identify, they're there to support us. And I get something from NA that, I've never ever had anywhere else, and that is my family. Literally, yous are my family. Yous understand me, you get me. It's literally, it's something wonderful, something special that we have. And if all it takes, I remember my sponsor saying to me, if you put half the effort into your recovery as what you did your addiction, you'll be sailing, Marlon. And there you go. I've never been dealt a bum steer yet. I've had hard times in recovery, but I've also had wonderful times in recovery. So, and it's all thanks to Annie giving me a day clean at a time and being able to, be there for myself and be there for others. So with that, actually, Michael, I'll just leave it at that. I'm just glad to be here and glad to be clean. Thank you.